already have on them, to know what motivates them and thus influence their vote.
That wraps it up for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Our roving producer and producer of Flashpoints in Espanol is Miguel Gavilan Molina. Our technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net or visit our SoundCloud page at soundcloud.com/flashpoints. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is Ursula K. Le Guin, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience, KBOO, Portland.
Hi, everybody. This is Dan Johnson, and you're listening to Between the Covers, and I have a really great guest today. His name is Rick Leonetti, and Rick is a Northwesterner by birth, lives in Portland, has been around the Portland area for a number of years, and he has ventured out into the world of book writing and has offered his first, which is titled The Man from the Place of Clay?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, you know, first, I'm so curious about the title, okay?
All right.
And then from the title, we're going to get into some other things. So why don't you explain that title?
Well, The Place of Clay is Adobe Buildings. And there's a character named Clayton, and the literal translation of Clayton is from the place of clay.
Okay. All right. Now, this is a story about five characters that somehow get tied together. Why don't you explain that and kind of give us an overview of what these people are like and what they're going to, well, don't give everything away, but, you know, give us a little idea of what they can expect as they take a trip.
Well, the book is about five strangers who, independently of one another, experience bizarre phenomena and unusual coincidences that lead them to believe that God is calling them to New Mexico. And the story is about their journey geographically, spiritually, and emotionally.
Okay. you're supposed to sort of end the thought with okay. Well, actually, we don't want to divulge an awful lot, but God plays a role in this book. And when you conceived of the idea of writing about God, and of course, that's been seldom done before.
Right.
Did you have in mind what God would look like to the reader?
Well, it's pretty metaphysical. So my belief is that God is energy. If God did, in fact, create us in his image, he doesn't look like us. He looks like the energy that's in us. And I think that that's the reflection of God. And they try to reconcile their versions of God with what they come to find.
Okay, so this is not Christianity's version of what God may or may not be.
Right. When I first thought about the book many, many years ago, it was going to be about reconciling the world's religions, because I've always believed that we're all saying the same thing. You know, I firmly believe that if you read the first few lines of Genesis, it's describing evolution as an ancient man would put it on paper. The Quran also talks about six time periods, not days, but time periods to create the earth. And Buddhists and Muslims all believe that there was a big bang and the universe is expanding and contracting just like science. So I wanted to reconcile that. And in researching the book, I found a lot of similarities in Native American cultures in the American Southwest to Catholicism, Christianity, and Judaism.
When you're talking about this, because I know that some listeners may have this question rolling around in their head, did you have this vision of God as being genderless?
Yes, I don't think there's a physical form. Okay. I think that we're all a part of God. You know, I think for me, the Big Bang was energy creating matter, and we are energy living inside matter. So that is my vision of God, formless, but powerful and strong.
I'm curious, how long did you think about this book before you actually sat down to write it?
Not long. In 1990, I did the first 10 chapters, and then life becoming what it does, I threw it in a filing cabinet. And the characters just lived on in my head. And in 2015, I dug it up. I only found chapters 6 through 10.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that I wanted to finish the story about these characters. So I rewrote those chapters and then wrote towards the end and then started the beginning again and completed the book.
Okay. You have an interesting group of people that you've assembled. And two of the people, one is named Cormac.
Yes.
And the other is Horace.
Yes.
And I find that those two were the ones that sort of clicked with me. And there's a section in the book where they have a discussion, if you will. And they're going back and forth about the issue of going to New Mexico and all that. But it's an interesting picture that's painted of no matter how opposite they were, they had a lot of things in common, too.
Yes.
So if you don't mind, I'd like you to read that just read it down the whole page.
Okay. Cormac glared at Horace, insulted by the comment. That is not a healthy attitude to have. Time should be regarded as precious, especially when there's less of it. There's nothing precious about time. It's a predator. It takes what it wants when it wants it, without care or concern, leaving us miserable bastards to deal with the loss and consequences. Horace rubbed his chest. Time is a fire that consumes our souls, leaving only pain in its wake. I would disagree, Cormac replied. Time is what brings us knowledge. Profound wisdom can only be gained with the passage of time. Time is a necessary component of relationships and love. Then maybe we're not so alike after all, Horace smiled. But hey, that doesn't mean we can't get along. Let's agree to disagree. More Jack? Horace raised his glass towards Cormac. I should stick with what I have here, Cormac responded. He rarely drank hard alcohol. There had been an occasional martini over the years, but that was done to keep up professional appearances. He was weary from the road, in a strange house, suffering from a black eye, and emotionally exhausted. He longed for sleep. So tell me, Doc, if you don't think it's God, I mean, what do you honestly make of all this? Cormac took a drink. I feel like I am trapped in a bad dream. Yeah, Doc, that sums up my whole existence.
Hmm. Yeah. I think that last line there was the one that really affected me, you know, caused me to think. Cormac being the bit of a drama queen, if you will.
Yes.
But yet highly educated and you know, extremely professional, but, you know, he knows down deep he's got some flaws to his character as well.
Right.
But all of your characters do, you know. Now, do you, when you assembled this crew together, did you find it easy to put the dialogue together that each one was matched with another, did you have somewhat of a game with that, or did you find it difficult?
It was pretty easy. You know, you say the characters Cormac and Horace click with you. They are the two halves of my soul. So the conversations between them flowed really easy. Cormac embodies my fears, my insecurities, and how I mask them. And Horace is all my pain and my vices. And so, you know, there's different parts of us. So it was very easy for me to write the dialogue with them.
A writer with vices?
Right.
That's hard to imagine.
Well, I have a few.
Yeah, we're not here to talk about vices. Did you, when you sat down to, and you finally committed yourself to writing the book, I'm always intrigued when I talk to writers about the writing process itself, because I think that's as critical as, you know, as the end product, because that's what's going to make it. As a first-time book writer, did you find that you had to develop new disciplines or old disciplines hidden away in order to keep on track with writing the book? Or did you know how to set those disciplines in line and just focus on doing what you had to do?
Well, when I was in high school, I had a teacher tell me the only thing that I would ever be successful at was writing, because I could do it in my own time. When I sat down, I took some time off work, and I sat down to write the book, and I was so passionate about bringing these characters to life and help them resolve their emotional and spiritual issues that it was pretty easy. But I'm able to get up, walk away, go shopping, take a drive or whatever, and then do those conversations in my head and come back and put them on paper. The half chapter with Dr. Blanton and Cormac in Cormac's office, that whole conversation was thought up on the beach in Lincoln City.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just walked up and down the beach every morning. By the time I went home, I was able to put everything on paper.
Now, do you have when you were, I'm sure that you were typing at a computer when you wrote the book.
Yes.
Okay. Did you have any of the new kind of apps that are available, like voice recognition and things like that, that you could employ in having that, you know, voice your print and let them print it out?
No, I just typed it all out. Originally, when it started, I didn't have a computer. It was 1990. And, you know, it was a typewriter. When I found it in the filing cabinet, all the notes are on the side. And I found that I could actually give these characters more life as I've matured since then.
Right.
And it just flowed out of me. You know, I just really was passionate about telling this story.
Yeah. I should tell our listeners that they are listening to Between the Covers. My guest is Rick Leonetti, and he is the author of The Man from the Place of Clay. And why did you pick New Mexico?
Well, before I started the book, I was walking by the television, and there were these shadowy images, and a voiceover came on and said, Santa Fe. Men have been drawn to it for centuries. And I thought it was going to be this great miniseries or movie. I was just sucked in, and it was a cologne commercial. A little while later, I saw L.A. Story with Steve Martin, and he said, there are three mystical places on the planet: the tree under which the Buddha meditated, the desert north of Santa Fe, and the coffee shop where he meets his girl. And it was just like the coincidences in the book. I kept hearing Santa Fe almost daily. So no internet or anything back then. I went to the library and started doing some research. I researched the mythological triangle, Native American cultures, and it just flowed really easy.
So you didn't have a stable of assistants to help you cull out all of this information?
No, I did it myself. I've been to the Taos Pueblo in Santa Fe twice now, and it truly is a mystical, magical place, and everyone should go there.
I've heard others say that. I really have. So, yeah. I wouldn't mind going sometime, but, I'd rather read about it in a book, but... Okay, what kind of advice do you have for new writers in getting started in the writing process?
Well, I self-published, which was an investment well worth it. You certainly get a bigger return. And with the publisher I went through, Luminari and Eugene, I was able to get my book on Amazon in Kindle and Nook formats. It's on Ingram, so it can be ordered at bookstores. Got it to the Library of Congress. They edited it for me, helped me with the cover design. I believe that's the way to go.
Yeah, I've never used Luminar. The first book I wrote, I used Lulu and wasn't overwhelmed with heaps of happiness, but it's an individual thing. But do you have any advice for people that are starting to search out the idea of publishing? Some of the questions that you might suggest they should ask people that they deal with in doing the publishing and so on.
Sure. You need to read over the contract very carefully. Know exactly what they're going to provide you with. You do want your publisher, if you're going through a publishing company, your return is going to be a lot less, but they do a lot more marketing for you and can get you into bookstores. If you self-publish, you want to make sure you have an editor, and you want to be able to choose from a couple of editors looking at stuff that they've done. You want to make sure you get in the Library of Congress, that you get an ISBN, that you get an electronic format. So you just want to check out everything you can, and by all means, go online and shop and compare.
Right. You know, another suggestion, if you don't mind me throwing something out, is there's a group in Portland, they cover most of the state, Willamette Writers, and they hold a conference every year. And they have a lot of folks involved in their annual conferences that are involved in doing a lot of the things that you talk about. And so, if you're thinking about writing a book, I think their conference is completed for this year, but they're another source to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I believe Wordstock is coming up in November.
Yeah, they used to be at the convention center, right?
Yeah, I think they're there this year, too.
Are they? They stopped for a year or two, a couple of years anyway. But, you're right. But Wordstock is a good source. Okay, do you have a follow-up to this book in mind?
Well, it was supposed to be a standalone book. I felt I wrapped things up very nicely, but the feedback I'm getting online and in person is people want more. So I have outlined a follow-up, and we'll see where that takes me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the book just came out, just
April.
April, yeah. So it's still fresh off the press.
Right.
You've got some time to, and there are a number of places where you can get yourself situated to do book readings, too.
Right.
You know, so that always helps. I know you briefly covered this earlier, but what did you say was the reason why you wanted to write a book with God as the prime character?
I think, how can I say this? I think religion is a problem. No matter what your vision of God is, he's not interested in religion. If you read the Bible, it's a good book, don't get me wrong, but it's kind of bipolar. You have a very angry, vengeful God in the first half, the Old Testament, who it's all about rules, it's all about Jewish law, and then you have what I believe in the New Testament to be a better version of God. The Quran also, fantastic book. But there's a lot of Islamic law in there. And I think that what's happened with religion is it's all these rules and regulations that man has to follow, written by man. I don't think God's interested in rules. I don't think he demands that we get together on a certain day. I think he wants us to be happy.
Right.
He or she, I should say. And we're here to learn. I mean, if we're truly energy, and when we leave these physical bodies, we go back and join the Great Spirit, the God Force, whatever. We're here to learn, to feel. We can't have emotions or senses when we're energy. So we can take that knowledge with us. I mean, this is our playground and our classroom. And I know that one day, when the universe collapses, we'll all be together as energy. And then, like Buddhists believe, it will start all over again.
Okay. I had a thought about this, and I want you to expand on it, if you will.
Sure.
In reading this book, I came to the conclusion that this book is not so much about man's relationship with God, but I believe that it had more to do with people finding themselves and how sometimes that journey is a very complex journey.
Right.
Any thoughts on that at all?
To seek out God just provides the backdrop for them to discuss their pain and their issues. They are brought together not only for this journey and to go to New Mexico, but because they can only help each other. We're all damaged. We're all carrying baggage. We all have some pain, things we're afraid of. These characters are no different. And it's, like I said, it is their journey. It's not just a spiritual journey. It's their emotional journey. And, you know, there's a section in there where I talk about the deer knows that its purpose is to provide man with food and clothing and tools, ancient man, that is. And it's about these people living their purpose, going beyond fate and choosing a destiny.
Now, I mentioned to you in one of our off-air conversations that If there was another passage or so in the book that you wanted to read, you can feel free to do that. Did you bring something with you that...
I did. Let's see here.
First, set it up for us. What are you...
All right. This is takes place on the Taos Pueblo. And Clayton, a Native American, is with Horace on the Pueblo. Horace looked up at Clayton. You don't know me. You don't know my pain. That is not true, Clayton said as he turned toward the creek. Look at the water. It was once in the sky. It came a great distance, turning to snow as it fell to Mother Earth. The sun warmed the snow to feed the sacred blue lake high in the mountains, which in turn creates the stream. Well, what a great story, Horace said, and they all lived happily ever after. Now, if you'll excuse me, this stream is Red Willow Creek. The water that flows down this path has supplied these people with fresh water for 1,000 years. They bathe in these waters. Newborn children are cleansed here. This water has kept countless animals and crops alive. Asking nothing in return, it has given life ever since it first began flowing. Is there a point to this? Horace asked. Clayton got to his knees and dipped his hand in the water. He pulled it out and let the water fall from between his fingers, leaving a single droplet in his palm. It's a long journey for that snowflake. It falls with no direction. It travels miles over rocks and waterfalls just to reach this point. It has no idea that it has a purpose. He moved his open palm to Horace. The last drop of water had turned to a snowflake. Like you, it has endured much to be here in this moment, exactly as it is meant to be. He blew gently in his palm, and the snowflake took flight and fell into the stream. And like you, it has no idea how much it will mean to someone downstream.
Hmm. That's cool. Okay, just for fun, okay, I know that you said that you liked or you felt that there was some sort of a connection between you and Cormac and Horace.
Right.
Okay. But who would you say is your favorite character?
Well, I guess I like Cormac. I do. I like his struggles. He does have all of my fears, and he does fight to overcome them. He's very reasonable and logical. So I would have to say he's my favorite, and I like how his story wraps up.
And do you think that if you write another book, that he would be a part of it?
That's possible.
Okay. So this is the long and the short of it. The book is The Man from the Place of Clay. Rick Leonetti is the author. This is his first offering in the book publishing world, and different than publishing a newspaper, huh?
Yes, yeah, it's a lot different.
different ballgame altogether. Yeah. Altogether. Well, it's an interesting book, and I think that it brings insights and it brings some thought provoking ideas too. So, look it up. It's at all the local booksellers.
Yeah, so, they can order it through Ingram Spark.
Yeah, yeah. So, my friends, you have been listening to Between the Covers. And I'm Dan Johnson, and I want to thank you for listening. And I want to remind you, too, that even though we just not too long ago came out of our fall membership drive, it's never too late for you to say, yes, it's time for me to become a member and I want to become a part of the KBOO community. And remember this also, that in 2018, KBOO is going to be celebrating 50 years of broadcasting in the Portland area. And that's a pretty notable thing. Let me tell you, it's an accomplishment. And so you need to stay tuned and be a part of that and look forward to all of the things that are going to transpire because of it. So, Rick, in the last moment or so, any final thoughts that you'd like to throw out there?
I hope you buy the book, and I hope you enjoy the story. I've gotten a lot of great feedback, and I feel it's a story worth reading. It's been a long time coming.
Fair enough. All right, my friends, this is Between the Covers. I'm Dan Johnson. Stay tuned for more thrilling episodes. We'll see you again soon.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Creating the Communities We All Yearn to Live In on Saturday, December 9th at 6 p.m. at the Global Homestead Garage in Portland. The community rights movements help cities and towns to protect the health, safety, and welfare of their people and natural areas. At the Creating the Communities We All Yearn to Live In event, the leaders of Community Rights US will speak, as well as Mark Lakem. Again, that's Creating the Communities We All Yearn to Live In on Saturday, December 9th at 6 p.m. at the Global Homestead Garage, 416 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
So ashamed.